Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to HuffPost's brand new weekly podcast, Am I Making You Uncomfortable? Presented by me, Brogan Driscoll.
And me, Rachel Moss. This podcast is a frank, honest conversation about women's bodies, health, and private lives. We cover underreported issues and tackle the topics that you're too squeamish to talk to your mates about.
This week, we're going to be talking about porn, specifically how it impacts our sex lives and relationships. And later, we'll be joined by Sangeeta Pillai, a sex educator and founder of Network Soul Sutras, which is all about South Asian female power and sexuality. So to kick things off and make us both feel super uncomfortable, I thought we should start by talking about our own introductions to porn. I know, sorry, but I feel like we've got to really, you know...
Go on.
Put ourselves in this kind of... Exactly, we've got to put ourselves in these situations. So I'll go first because I know it's a bit of a tough ask. My first experience of porn was very early on, like weirdly early on. Me and my next door neighbour, we used to play around each other's houses a lot, and we somehow discovered that in my mum and dad's bedroom.
Oh no! that's enough already.
I know, it's so weird, isn't it? It's so weird. But my mum, there's no way they're going to listen to this, so it's fine. They had this coffee table book that was like from the 70s. Apparently, they got given it as a wedding present. And I'm a bit like, yeah, sure. I don't know if that's true. And it was called The Joy of Sex. And I think it's like quite a book. Like, I think it's got a reputation. And it was basically a massive book, especially for like, I don't know, like a 9-year-old seeing it for the first time. And it was all about... it was kind of set up, like the chapters were like menus. So it was like, had like
menus.
It was like a menu. So it had like starters for foreplay, and then it had like the main course bit, and then it had like dessert.
Did it
and
have like pictures? Was it like Cosmo style?
It had massive pictures. I'm trying to think in my head whether they were illustrations or pictures. But anyway, me and my next door neighbour, who I won't name, but like when we knew people were downstairs, just like creep in and like find it and look at it. I literally don't know why I told you that, but anyway, there we go. So that was my first experience of
hilarious
erotica.
Also, that book does not sound sexy. Like, it just so doesn't. Okay, so I guess I now have to go. I feel like yours is really innocent and cute, but my first experience of porn was actually a little bit not as jolly. The first time I saw anything pornographic at all was actually on the phone of somebody that I was dating. I was in my late teens. Obviously, something had been left open that I wasn't meant to see, and borrowed the phone to look up something, and bam, you know, we didn't expect to see that. And, you know, it was quite a, like, baptism of fire introduction, because as well, like, we don't talk about porn. So at the time, I was so confused about, like, what am I meant to be feeling about this? Like, do I laugh it off? Am I meant to be angry? Am I meant to be upset? Am I meant to be turned on? I don't know. It was just so confusing. Because it's such a taboo, like, I didn't tell anyone about it.
Am I the first person you've told?
You are, actually. I've told my full story
to you.
Oh, you've
kept it inside for so long.
I know, isn't it crazy? But the only time, I think actually I might have mentioned it to a couple of mates since, and this is like the only other discussion I've ever had with another human being about porn, was when a bunch of my girl mates, years and years and years later, probably we were about like 25, and we were all pissed. And then somebody brought up porn. Suddenly you realise that all your friends who you've maybe known for, you know, 10, 15 years have all got actually quite divisive opinions about porn. Like among this group of women, there was somebody who loved it, somebody who hated it, somebody who said, if you listen to porn or watch porn in a relationship, you're cheating on your partner. And I was just kind of like there watching this crazy ping pong battle of opinions happen. I just didn't expect it at all. And then of course we sobered up and never spoke about it ever again.
I was going to say, it's so interesting that you had those conversations with drunk, you were drunk, sorry. I'm sure a lot of people will relate to that, actually, that boldness that comes out after you've had some wine. Unfortunately, we haven't had any wine because it's still quite early in the afternoon.
I had a strong coffee. That's as bold as it's getting.
So I guess the reason that we wanted to talk about porn now is that it's as good a time as any, obviously. It's something that we haven't really ever spoken about before with friends. So why not have the first conversation we have broadcast? You know, we were talking about how lockdown brings quite an interesting dimension to pornography, just because obviously lots of people are spending this period on their own, people who would normally be dating or able to like go out and hook up with people. So there's kind of a need there to be satiated. But also then there are people who are living in close proximity with family, partners, friends. And are they still consuming as much porn as they used to? Are they having to hide it? Are they having to suddenly be open about it? There's a lot to get into.
Yeah, I'm a fan of porn. We're all really sexual creatures, and watching porn is certainly a part of our society now. I think I feel nervous speaking about it publicly, as I've always sort of thought that porn is a really personal thing. It's a place where you can explore various themes of your sexual desires without really being judged or embarrassed. I find that my own tastes tend to vary quite a bit, depending on my mood or where I am in my life at the time. I think it's really great that porn has become far more accessible these days. It's not like it used to be. No need to go to sex stores or buy plastic coated magazines. I think the rise of internet porn has made things so much easier. I can access pretty much anything from my smartphone from the comfort of my own bed and privacy in my own room.
So the first time I really started delving into what porn is has been in the last couple of years. I run an organisation called Sisters, and whilst putting together work around healthy relationships and what those relationships are influenced by, we found that many of the young people we worked with were influenced by porn, except the porn was very derogatory and treated females really badly. And so I started really delving into what porn was and what is ethical porn. I think it's really important to understand what porn is in the commercial mainstream sense and what ethical porn is, and people really need to understand that.
Today we're joined by Sangeeta Pillai, a sex educator and founder of Network Soul Sutras, which is all about South Asian female power and sexuality. She's also a host of award-winning Masala podcast and has been a writer for over 20 years.
So hi, Sangeeta. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're super, super excited to have you here. And I see you have brought a prop with you. What is that?
I've got my little favourite stress buster, which is, as you can see, Rachel, a very large bottom with a thong in it. And you squeeze the bottom like so. And it's a great stress busting tool. And I thought it was appropriate for our podcast today.
It's very appropriate and hilarious. I love it. I think every guest should bring a prop, and it should probably always be a stress busting bum.
Maybe this could be the prop that belongs to your show.
Oh, I would love
that. Could be your thing.
We can be our own emoji. I think that's the kind of stress buster that you can only have in a working from home situation. Imagine if you went into the office and like someone had that on their desk. Cool, HR.
Very serious corporate meeting.
I like it. I'm all for it. So Sangeeta, before you joined us, we were sharing our first introductions to porn and the first time we saw pornographic material. Brogan's was ridiculous. Mine was slightly more traumatic. But what was your introduction to porn like?
I think I was about maybe 13, and I lived in India, so I grew up in India, spent most of my life there. Mm-hmm. And my friends and I went to a video store, because that's what you did then. And we hired this video, and I remember it was the first time I'd seen sex, and I was horrified. And it was some really weird stuff, I think, because the guy in the film had a lot of hair all over his body. He was like a very large, hairy beast. And I remember thinking, this is really weird. This can't be fun. And this was my first kind of experience.
You're like, does everyone look like that? Like,
is there something I don't know? All men look like this under their clothes.
As a sex educator, you've developed a super positive attitude to sex over the years. And I wondered whether porn had kind of fed into that. I mean, what's your consumption of porn now?
It's very different to how I was when I was growing up. So I grew up in India in a very traditional Indian family. And most Asian girls, particularly the ones that were kind of me and of my generation, sex wasn't for us. Sex was for men. All we did was kind of be prepared to get married. And mm-hmm. when you got married, sex was something you put up with. You never had an active kind of role in it. You never talked about it. Even our bodies, sex was something that was done to us, not something we did actively. Mm. And there's also the sense of somehow in traditional South Asian culture that you guard your body. Your body's this precious kind of pure thing that you guard until the time that you get married to somebody and then they get your body. So there's no real agency. So then if you look at those kind of ideas, then things like masturbation or porn are very far away from your experience. Mm. So I think I didn't look at porn or even talk about masturbation with my friends until I was much, much older. None of us did it. It wasn't even a thing. Mm. So if you sort of think of the shame attached to anything sexual, the shame attached to the female body in any sexual sense, you know, that makes a lot of this very, very difficult for South Asian women.
Yeah. Was there like a U-turn moment when you realized that shame, like you didn't need to internalize that shame?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it was a much later experience, I think, sort of even mid-30s when I was single and I started dating. I'd come out of a long relationship. Starting to sort of meet people and have sex with them was this huge revolution for me. And I was like, oh my God, this is good. An orgasm feels amazing. This is why people do it. And it's, you know, it puts this like glow on my skin and this kind of little swing to my hips when I walk. And that's what good sex does. And it was like this big aha moment for me to think, but why was there so much kind of taboo attached to this when it's actually so good for you? So that framing of sex as something shameful to this realization for me personally, that this can be amazing and liberating and fun and just feels good and does good to us as women, was a huge, huge moment for me, I think, in my own journey, which then led me to do the work that I do with other women and in unpacking this taboo and getting us to talk about this stuff. So yeah, it was a massive, massive change for me.
Here's one woman who got in touch and she really spoke to the experience of, I guess, consuming porn as a South Asian woman.
I think porn can be informative but damaging at the same time. When I was growing up, you didn't really talk about sex with your female friends. So the only way to find out more about it was through porn. So you'd find out about what you liked, what you didn't. And in a sense, that was quite liberating. But when you grow up, you tend to be a little bit disillusioned, and it could be quite damaging, especially for people of colour, because porn with people of colour is seen as a fetish rather than the norm. So you don't really see normal, you know, it's hard enough to see normal body types, but you don't really see normal body types for people of colour. And you just tend to be slightly disillusioned by that.
I wondered whether we could kind of talk about some of the themes around how people of colour are portrayed within porn and how, you know, from that testimonial, we heard how the lady feels quite kind of alienated in that space. I didn't feel that, you know, porn was necessarily for her.
There's a lot of stereotyping in porn, I think, whether that's kind of white Caucasian bodies. There is a lot of racial stereotyping, I think. Even the way porn is categorized, whether it's, I don't know, Eastern women or submission or, you know, South Asian, all of that. So I think the issue is that already as brown or black women, we're already occupying really small spaces. And then when you get into porn, those boxes become smaller, where particularly if you're South Asian, you're meant to be the submissive, good wife material that we're trained all our lives to be. And then in porn, you get into those smaller boxes. And if you look at categories within porn hubs or, you know, portals, they are Asian or they are Black or they are a certain kind of... And it is just, those are not the people we are. It doesn't capture who we are. And it is a particular kind of fetishization, I think, which is not healthy. The other thing is I have yet to see a South Asian couple on porn, on any porn film that looks anything like my experience or anywhere that I recognize myself. So I think that's a huge problem with porn. While porn in itself is fine, and I, you know, I'm a believer in it, and I think it is good for us. It shows us what we want to, you know, experiment with within a relationship or with ourselves. But there are lots of issues with it. Yeah. This being one of them. I think this racial stereotyping of us and our experiences. So yeah. I absolutely hear what she's saying.
And I think, like you touched on there, the visual representation of people as well, just in terms of like the porn body. Whatever race you are, it seems like there's sort of an acceptable body type in porn that everyone adheres to, and that's for men and for women. Like, we've read loads of reports, a load of studies around body image for young girls and arising people thinking they need labiaplasty or, you know, designer vagina surgery and all these things. Is that something that you've come across as well? Do you think porn does play a part in that?
Massively. If you think about it, the way we perceive a beautiful body now is essentially a porn body. We have hairless vulvas. That's the normal.
Yeah.
I remember dating this much younger guy a couple of years ago. He'd never seen a vulva with hair. He was really shocked. And thinking about it, a lot of my younger friends, so I'm in my kind of late 40s, so my sexual experiences are different to people in their 20s or 30s. And I've had conversations with young South Asian women where they've said, we'd never in a million years sleep with somebody with hair. To me, it's really bizarre that what is perfectly natural, pubic hair, is there for a reason. We were born that way. It's what separates grown women from younger girls, right? Mm-hmm. It's coming of age and it's protective and it's all of those things. But now pubic hair is a fetish. I mean, how messed up is that? Yes. And that comes from porn, I think, because we've normalized what is not normal. It's just bizarre. Mm-hmm. That's one of my kind of pet peeves, I think, against porn. A lot of the kind of reasons people do labioplasty is because they want a porn vulva. But again, that's not, I mean, who says that's beautiful? Porn does.
Like, it's like a uniform vulva. And
yes,
we know that, you know, vulvas are all different. And that's kind of weird, but we're only being shown one.
Shown type. One particular type. And I think that's the point. And I think that's the problematic point, where we're only being shown one type of able-bodied, large-breasted, large-penised, if that's even a word, body. And everything else, which is what 99% of the human race, doesn't fit to that, because porn actors are actors. They're performing. They look a certain way. They spend a lot of money and time to look like that. That's their job. We don't do that. We don't look like that. And I've read, again, a lot of reports which say that a lot of young people, because now porn is accessible from our phones and we watch, it's so easy to consume, right? But if you grow up with that being the dominant narrative of how sex looks like, how our bodies look like, how women look like. And then, you know, when we have real sex, it doesn't measure up. Of course it's not going to. That's a film. This is real life, you know.
Yeah. I think we were saying earlier, like our introductions to porn were so shaky. But so I'm in my late 20s, Brogan's in her early 30s. So we're just about within the generation who didn't grow up with smartphones. I kind of got it towards the end of my school career. And I think, thank God for that. Because now, as you say, kids have got it all the time. And I don't know whether like the sex ed in schools has caught up. I've got a few friends who are teachers, and I think some of them have spoken to students about porn, but some of them haven't. And you just think, what are kids growing up with now? Like, if we're confused about it, what must they be thinking about it?
And I think it's particularly damaging to young women, because I saw this really interesting show. I think it was on Channel 4 or something, about the effect that a lot of consumption of porn has on younger women. Younger women think that is normal. Like, a guy grabbing your hair and forcing you to go down on him is normal sexual behavior. Violence becomes normalized. And I think those are the issues. And I think if we are to carry on watching porn, we must find a way to make it more equal and kind of educate people in terms of what is okay and what is not. I think that's a really important thing to think about.
I know that there are a lot of, like, there are some feminist porn sites, like Erica Lust, her work comes up a lot in terms of ethical porn. But, I mean, a question for you, Sangeeta, like, how do we know what is okay? Do you have any recommendations? Are there any sites or organisations that you kind of speak to your network about?
I think Erica Lust, as you mentioned, absolutely. I think it's important to see kind of where it comes from. So if we can afford ethical porn, we must try and do that where you know that the actors have been paid and the people that have created are actually being paid for the content, which I believe most of the, what they call the free tube channels, don't necessarily do. Mm. So Erica Lust, absolutely. Someone else I know is called Anna Richards. So she's got a network called Frolic Me. She's got a company. And again, her whole ethos is about feminist porn, about storylines that depict female sexuality, female pleasure. And then there's this whole other area which I'm very interested in, which is audio porn. Things like Dipsy and, you know, there's a few other people that are doing that. And where there's a whole emphasis on storylines, characters. And I think that is one of the ways maybe we could go around this kind of what is ethical and what is not. And also there are lots of porn actors who now have their own websites. I interviewed a South Asian porn star for my podcast on series 2 of Masala Podcast called Sahara Night. And she, you know, has her own channel. So there, you know, it's going to the performers themselves. So that might be another way around it as well. So I think looking at who's providing ethical porn, looking at who's aligned with our value systems as well. So if we're feminists and if we're thinking that it's really important to show different types of bodies, that female pleasure is at, you know, at the center of this for us, then going to people like Erica Lust and Anna Richards and Dipsy and places like that, where we know that that's happening.
I love that you brought up audio porn, actually, because we had a feature on HuffPost about it. And it just turns out something that I hadn't really thought about before, but makes total sense, is that audio porn is making porn more accessible to a much bigger audience. So, for example, there was one guy who was interviewed as a case study in this piece, and he's blind. And he was talking about how, you know, disabled people are often desexualized, but having audio porn means that he can engage and he can enjoy it. And that's such a positive thing. And then there was also a girl who'd moved back in with her parents who said, like hell, am I going to watch visual porn in my parents' house? Because can you imagine like them walking in? But listening to like a bit of, you know, porny audio in your headphones, it's like pretty harmless. And so I'm all for that. Like, it's been on my to-do list, actually. I need to check it out. Sorry, Mum.
Check it out. Listening. I loved it. Yeah, absolutely loved it. When you mentioned that, I have a funny story. A friend of mine was at home during lockdown and she's got kids. So she said, I'm going to go into my bedroom, turn on my laptop, have a little me time. Turns on the video. She's watching it and there's no sound. And so she's thinking, what's going on? So she's like, carries on watching it. Then there's a knock on the door and her son comes up and says, Mum, there's a funny sound on the Bluetooth.
Oh, my God.
I asked if I could mention it on the podcast and she said, yes, don't give my name. And I'm like, I won't give you a name.
That's so made me feel really...
That's happened.
Like, Brogan's like flushed and fanning. That's made me feel so uncomfortable.
I can see your skin's got a little bit flushed there, Brogan.
I knew as soon as you were like, the sound had gone, I was like, oh my God, who's using the headphones? Someone's using the headphones.
I didn't even think about it. I was like, yeah, maybe it just didn't work. And then Bluetooth, Mum.
Oh, well, at least they were like young enough to not.
Yeah,
really
I don't think
understand.
They quite understood what was happening. They just said there's a funny sound coming out of the, you know, the speaker.
Well, that kind of brings us on to another topic we wanted to talk about today, because obviously during lockdown, people's porn habits are going to have to change. If you're someone who does consume it regularly and then you're suddenly with parents or your partner, that's a whole issue. And we were also talking about maybe, you know, even if you've been in a long-term relationship, you might not necessarily realise what your partner gets up to when you're not at home, but now you're at home together all the time. Do you think couples are going to have that conversation at the moment?
Definitely, I think, because there is no escape. Mm-hmm. You're going to know everything that the other person gets up to. So I think this is a good opportunity to sort of talk about stuff you're into. Obviously, people are a little bit hesitant because they might be sharing things about themselves that maybe they don't feel so comfortable sharing with their partners. But I think it's a great opportunity to share different aspects of you so they can get to know what your sexual repertoire might include. It might make things really exciting. But there is this other aspect, I think, where for some people, their porn is a private thing. It's their kind of their headspace where they go to. It's their kind of fantasy. If that's what it is for you, maybe talk to your partner and say, would you like to go for a walk for an hour? Have your social distance walk.
like, I'm having my, some self-love in the
self-love
sense.
While you do your social distancing.
An hour feels like quite a while. I mean, I don't...
Well, it just depends, doesn't it? I could do an hour, you know.
So with each of our guests who come onto the podcast, we ask the same question. So as a way to end, Sangeeta, what makes you uncomfortable?
Ooh, that's already made me uncomfortable. I can feel like a bit hot under my armpits.
Just Brogan's voice.
What made you uncomfortable? What makes me uncomfortable? Yes, things that I've kind of battled all my life, you know, people's kind of judgment, where if you, you know, as a South Asian woman, if I say I watch porn, that's immediate like judgment. And then I've got to kind of fight my battle within myself to say, yeah, they might think that, but that doesn't make it abnormal for me to do this. So that those things make me uncomfortable because they're deeply wired, I think, in my psyche, in my upbringing. So that's my personal discomfort, if you will. There was one other thing I wanted to say about porn, actually. What porn has done within kind of heterosexual relationships is made sex fit into a little box. It's like this penis-centric view of sex that we've all now, you know, internalized as that being sex. Man, woman, penis into vagina, boom, 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 man has an orgasm, and that's it. And everybody goes home. You have a sandwich, whatever, you know, finished, end of. But within a relationship or even within somebody you might be having casual sex with, sex is this whole, you know, wonderful feast of all of these things you could do with each other. Penetration is one part of it. And we seem to have lost the rest of it. It's like going into this buffet, like absolute feast of like 50,000 things you could eat, but you get stuck on the chicken because that's the only thing that everybody's told you about, you know? So I think that's something that porn's done as well. And I think it would be good to keep it in mind when you're with your partner, your lover, you know, to say there's all of this wonderful stuff out there.
Sangeeta, thank you so much for joining us. That was such a fun chat and I learned a lot. So wonderful, educational and fun.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
That's it from Am I Making You Uncomfortable this week. I'm Brogan Driscoll and you can find me at Brogan_Driscoll.
And I'm Rachel Moss, and you can find me at @RachelMoss_.
This podcast is produced by Crystal Genesis, and our sound engineer is Nag Karinde.
You've just listened to Am I Making You Uncomfortable? #AIMYU.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.